From the Time Machine to 1984, all the way to the Hunger Games, dystopias have only gotten more popular over time. This could be because the stories they tell and the worlds they explore seem increasingly similar to our own. Looking at all the seemingly unsolvable issues within our own society leads us to that very question. Are we today also living in a dystopia? Well, to understand whether our world qualifies as one, we really need to just figure out what a dystopia actually is, and what sets dystopian media apart from other genres. At the most basic level, it can be understood as the mirror image of a utopia. While a utopian society is either close or has already attained perfection, a dystopia is the opposite. It's a world where negative aspects of society or massive looming problems dominate everything else. It could be nearly anything, from out of control technology to an oppressive regime or even the consequences of some cataclysmic world-changing event. As long as you've got that, the only restriction is that society still needs to exist. While it wouldn't be very nice to live in a world where the zombie apocalypse has taken place, if wider society has already broken down, then it wouldn't be a dystopia. So this is the nuts and bolts of the genre, but it still doesn't really tell us anything about why people like the genre or how much a dystopia resembles our own world. One lucky byproduct of how messed up the world has become is that we've got plenty of material here to help us along. When the world shut down in early 2020, it was pretty easy to see why people thought we were living in a dystopia. Between the empty streets and the 24/7 news coverage, it was almost impossible to go through your day without being confronted by it all. It wasn't surprising that in the first 2 months of the outbreak, the game Plague Inc. saw its global downloads more than double, pushing it towards the top of the App Store charts. Its gameplay of managing the spread of a pathogen was all the more relevant. The film Contagion, which depicts an imaginary flu pandemic, also saw a massive burst of interest. It went from being the 270th most popular movie straight into the iTunes top 10 for digital downloads. These jumps in popularity were pretty predictable, really. In the same way that any movie which seems to predict the future will see renewed interest. If audiophobic aliens really did invade, then A Quiet Place would probably see a meaty bump in sales, at least among people who don't mind reading subtitles. But while Contagion and Plague Inc. aren't really dystopias either, it does illustrate the key behind what's made the genre what it is today. Dystopias are based on taking a problem with our own world and magnifying it until it dominates and defies everything. If you're a writer or any kind of artist, there's clearly more value in doing this with negative aspects of society compared to the good parts. It'd simply be boring to read or watch a film about a true utopia, as there isn't really any conflict or stakes when the problems have already been solved. But dystopian media, on the other hand, can tell us something about our own world. By magnifying a real problem through the lens of fiction, we get a different, more detailed look at it than we could get on our own. By making the problem define the entire story, it lets us focus completely on it. In our own lives, there's too many other things that get in the way, and it's in this way that dystopian media helps us take control over these daunting, practically unsolvable problems that we're faced with today. While there isn't much surviving philosophy on how to make a dystopia, there's plenty of philosophers who try to do the opposite, and figure out what makes a perfect society. Some of them never really saw their plans put into action. Plato's idea of an idealized society involved a strict caste system ruled over by mathematician philosopher kings. But as far as we know, nobody ever really tried this. Other ideas were more successful. Confucius and his ideas about society laid the bedrock for over 2,000 years of Chinese history. By far the most impactful utopian philosophy of recent history began with Hegel. A 19th century German philosopher, he saw history as a slow, inevitable march towards an enlightened free society. In his view, everything was leading up to that utopian point, and it's an essential part of his theory of dialectics. But while we might not have reached that point yet, we have seen one of his students' theories put into practice. Marx took Hegel's ideas and applied them to a struggle between the workers and an oppressive ruling class. Over history, this internal struggle played out time and time again, inevitably leading to a communist utopia after the workers finally triumphed. But unfortunately, this never really happened either. In fact, when communists got into power, it led to some of the most dystopian and oppressive societies ever. Whether it's a fault with people or it's a fault with communism itself doesn't really matter for our purposes. The fact remains that these utopian ideas enabled one of the most oppressive dystopian regimes in history. The Soviet Union even directly inspired one of the dystopias we'll talk about later. But it's clear that utopian thinking and the lengths people go to achieve it can easily lead to a dystopian society instead. Once the ends justify the means, any amount of suffering becomes excusable to reach the end goal. There are some theories that don't directly describe how to create a dystopia, but they do predict that the slide into a dystopian society is inevitable. One of my favorite TV shows is Mr. Robot, and you can probably tell by the amount of times we use the clips in the show. But did you ever see the mail service they use in the show? Well, they're actually today's sponsor, ProtonVPN. The VPN that is taking over the world with its massive global network. ProtonVPN offers a vast server network of 8,600 servers in over 110 countries, with high-speed connections up to 10 gigabytes per second using VPN Accelerator. And with over 100 million users, they've been featured in the New York Times and Time magazine. Because ProtonVPN stands out, they operate out of Switzerland, which is protected by strong privacy laws. Proton's journey began with ProtonMail, their encrypted email service. But now they offer a complete privacy ecosystem. ProtonVPN, ProtonDrive for secure file storage, and ProtonPass for encrypted password management. So why should you use ProtonVPN? Well, because they hide your IP address, letting you browse privately and access content from around the world. From streaming, you can watch shows and sports from anywhere by changing your IP location. If you're a gamer, you can benefit from accessing cloud services and avoiding throttling. And even if you're not a gamer, using ProtonVPN protects your online activities and access social networks securely. And with their P2P file sharing, you're safeguarded from malware and restricted sites, and NetShield blocks ads and trackers for a better browsing experience. And on top of that, they're also dedicated to privacy with a strict no-logs policy, independently verified by auditors, and open source code for complete transparency. Allowing you to enjoy secure access to content including Netflix and torrenting, Proton's trusted reputation and accessible plans, starting at just $3.99. So try ProtonVPN today by using the link in the description below to learn more and safeguard your online freedom with Proton. The general idea these theories share is that something about technology and scientific progression leads to a dystopia. Either we're guaranteed to abuse the tools it gives us, making the world worse, or the technology changes society itself and creates the conditions that lead to a dystopia. Ted Kaczynski, otherwise known as the Unabomber, was just one of the people who believed in these ideas. Now, he had some insane thoughts on how to try and change things, and seemed delusional that he could even affect things in any way. But the basic ideas in his manifesto are lucid, and it was even used as evidence that he was very capable of knowing his actions were wrong, as it was a very well-written manifesto with many interesting thoughts. You see, he thought that industrial society and technology were slowly stripping people of their natural freedom, whilst destroying the natural world in the process. The outward benefits of technology are enough to convince people to just let this happen, but he ignores just how much of an impact modern technology has in making people's lives better in general. For starters, lots of the people watching this today would be dead if not for modern medicine. Modern agriculture means that most people don't have to slave away in the fields, and bad weather doesn't generally lead to mass famine anymore. There's even the fact that as a country becomes more industrialized and more developed, it also becomes more likely that it's a democracy rather than a dictatorship. In nearly every metric, it does seem like technology has made the world better for most people, at least so far. The past 20 years or so have started to bring some very big doubts into people's minds. When new technologies get developed today, it often seems like the negatives massively outweigh the benefits. The internet and instant global communication has led to social media and all the damage that's done to society as well. It also pushed mass surveillance and data harvesting into overdrive. AI promises to be the next big thing, but some of its most popular uses include role-playing with a fake girlfriend or replacing the Earth's need for humans in the first place. It all gives the impression that at some point in the past few decades, technology became more destructive than constructive for society, and if this trend does exist and it does continue into the future, it will lead to a dystopian society if it hasn't already. With all of that said, we can get down to the specifics. The question of whether our world is a dystopia might be best answered by people's personal experiences. If the world's problems are preventing someone from having a good and meaningful life, then for all intents and purposes, they're living in a dystopia. But what are those specific problems? Well, let's go through these problems and look at the dystopian media that analyzes them. While it's definitely outshined by other big problems with society, population collapse is a growing concern for nearly all of the world. The media doesn't really focus on it because it doesn't bring in any ratings. It's a gradual problem of statistics and trend lines. But when you examine it more closely, it could shake the very foundations on which our society is built. Modern economies are dependent on growth. If a country's economy stops growing for just a few months, it slips into recession and millions of people see the standard of living drop, often for years afterwards. Part of this assumption that the economy will just keep growing is built onto the idea that there will always be more people to fill all of the jobs that society needs. Population collapse throws a spanner in the works. As it stands today, large parts of the working population in nearly all developed countries are set to enter retirement over the next few decades, but there's far fewer people being born or entering the workplace to fill this gap. It means that the world is already dealing with a large dependent population compared to a small proportion of working, economically productive people. It's not the kind of problem that seems like it would create a dystopia all on its own, unless you dial this up to 11. That's the scenario that the 2006 film Children of Men explores. The film is set in an alternate future where nobody has been able to have children for two decades, pushing society to the edge. Developing countries have almost entirely collapsed without a working population to keep them sustained. Richer, developed countries are a bit better off, The massive amounts of refugees combined with the economic hardship have pushed them deep into authoritarianism. The film revolves around an apathetic civil servant trying to protect humanity's last chance at a brighter future, the only baby to be born in years. A lot of the movie's strength isn't in the plot though. Instead, it's the background information and the details that really tie the film together. There's so much there to make it feel authentic, some of the details that fans have noticed really show how much thought they put into this. While the film was released years before the shard was built in London, the film is set in the future so it's visible in the skyline. Then there's the underlying detail that people have become even more obsessed with their pets because they're trying to fill the hole that children left. A lot of the political commentary and the details of the overarching story are left in the background as well. As we mentioned earlier, dystopian media often amplifies and magnifies things going on in our own world, and this is no exception. The two sides of the conflict in Children of Men are both distortions of today's political divide. The rich and powerful are depicted as fascist oppressors, living in their own little bubbles, oblivious to the suffering going on around them. They hoard art from the old world, but it's all meaningless because it's been taken out of the world which gave it context, and soon nobody will be around to appreciate it. They keep the shaky establishment in place with propaganda, brutal reprisals, and oppression. You would expect the film's version of the left to therefore be the good guys, fighting to take down the oppressive system, but instead they're just much more morally grey. One of the first action scenes is later revealed to be an inter-faction assassination plot, for example, and it shows how divided and power-hungry they really are, trying to use humanity's last hope as a political tool. They clearly want to tear down the old order, but that's the only thing they're unified by. At the end of the film, in a big battle scene, they're still just as violent and threatening to the last hope of humanity as the government has been. The whole political conflict running through the movie is framed as the result of hopelessness for the future. But when they see the hope, and they see the baby at the end of the movie, it's one of the most powerful moments in the film. All the conflict and the fighting just stops when they can see that there is still hope. Children of Men does a great job of visualizing our worst fears when it comes to population collapse, but it goes even deeper than that. The film explores the problems with a decaying society. The fact that it's all so intuitive and recognizable shows us a lot about our own world today. The deep resemblance definitely pushes us towards the conclusion that we are in fact living in a dystopia, but it also definitely helps that the movie is trying to imagine what our times would look like. It's a very realistic, close to home dystopia set only a few years from the current day. A different test would be to see how our world stacks up against a dystopia that seems like it's much more different to our world. One where flying cars, cyborgs, and other futuristic technologies are everywhere. Like the world of Blade Runner 2049. Cyberpunk as a genre, and Blade Runner in particular, focuses on what it means to be human and where we should draw the line between human and machine. In the film, we see a world where every intangible part of humanity has been figured out and replicated, then turned into a product. These human-like machines or replicants are everywhere in the film, and they're treated like a lower class of individual. They're human in pretty much every single way, except for the fact they still can't have children of their own. It's the final barrier yet to be broken down by technology, and Blade Runner 2049's world uses it as justification for their slavery. The story follows Kay, a replicant whose job it is to hunt down other replicants that have gone rogue and rebelled against their programming. In the process, he discovers the body of a replicant who has given birth. It's a discovery that could change the whole society's view on replicants, but as we'll find out, it's also something which could seal the fate of replicants as lower class citizens forever. Wallace, the de facto corporate overlord of the world and the creator of the replicants, also wants to find the promised child. Replicants are still expensive and slow to create, meaning they still can't fully replace people. If he can unlock that final secret, it'll perfect his product and give him pretty much total control. It's this fact that makes the film feel so close to home, despite all the futuristic technology and skyscraper-sized holograms. It's a world caught in an awkward middle phase, stuck between the past and a utopian future. If non-sentient replicants were perfected and there were enough of them, you could imagine freeing up enough resources for everyone to have a good life. But instead, their scarcity and the tyrannical control of corporations has made the world even more unequal. All the wealth and power is hoarded by the ruling corporate class. The rest of the world is left in an even worse position. We see this in the film when he visits the factory that is all still held up by child labor and oppression. The technology that promised salvation for the masses has instead only deepened those gaps. It mirrors the way that technology seems to be impacting our world today. We're constantly told about how innovations like AI are going to make the economy more productive and therefore make people's lives better. But as we've gotten more advanced, people are increasingly seen as numbers on a spreadsheet. The further we go, the more the world seems to alienate people. Despite massive improvements in productivity and wealth creation, tons of people are just poorer and have less opportunities than they had 10 or even 50 years ago. The world of Blade Runner 2049 has gone further on this path than ours has. Corporations are publicly in full control of every branch of the government, for example, rather than just pulling the strings from the background. But the fact that we're even on this path to begin with betrays a dystopian quality about our modern world, and how it doesn't doesn't seem like it's designed for people anymore. This is just one small part of the themes explored by Blade Runner 2049, of course. To get a more detailed breakdown, check out our full video on the movie. We've seen two dystopian societies so far that have turned into dystopias by outside forces. Either the progression and misuse of technology in the case of Blade Runner, or a global fertility crisis in Children of Men. But these aren't necessary. All you need for a dystopia is a society that's reliant or even designed to create its own misery. Enter 1984, the essential and possibly the most oppressive dystopian society ever imagined. There's a reason that 1984 has had such a huge impact on culture. It explains the workings of an oppressive society incredibly well, even decades later, and nothing else gives us the same tools to accurately deconstruct the totalitarianism of our own world, which we've also done a huge video on before. The world of 1984 is defined by stagnation. The ideology of the ruling party and the world they created is expertly designed to suppress and dominate every other part of life. One of the most striking parts of Orwell's dystopia is what the party has done to language. Normal languages, like the kind that we use, don't exist in a vacuum. Every word or phrase we say only has any meaning based on the context in which it's said. The philosopher Wittgenstein explains this through his theory of language games. Take the word cut, for example. If you read it in a recipe, it's probably referring to something about chopping vegetables, but a director shouting it on a movie set would make the word mean something completely different. All words are like this. They're all dependent on the specific language game that you're playing at the time. They're just building blocks. In 1984, though, even this freedom is in the process of being suppressed. Orwell imagined the party creating a new language called Newspeak, where most of the linking words have been taken out, while other words have been changed or removed entirely. The result is a language which has barely any building blocks and where the context has already been decided. It only works and you can only understand it in the context of submitting to a party rule. Rebellion and disagreement within the party line is therefore impossible to even comprehend when using Newspeak. As we've said before, dystopian media often amplifies things we see in our own world today. And while we haven't created a whole new language yet, we have seen certain words and phrases getting removed from our language completely. And social media is one of the biggest culprits. There's plenty of words which would be more accurate, but we can't actually say them because of YouTube's arbitrary rules. It's all a way to restrict language so that things people talk about fit into the sanitized corporate context which they want to force on people. All the stuff we've been talking about seems to confirm our worst fears, that we are living in a dystopia. The fact that our society embodies so many dystopian qualities seems to confirm this, but it still isn't the full picture. There's still one part of dystopian media that we haven't actually fully discussed, and that's the theme of hope, which is always present in some way or another. Some dystopian stories have a positive ending, which implies that the society moved on from this phase and got better in some way. Children of Men is like that, for example. It's all about the power of hope. Others, like 1984, seem like they end with all hope having been extinguished. The main character of Winston eventually succumbs to indoctrination and loses his humanity. But even in the bleakest dystopia imaginable, that hope still exists somewhere. The parts of life the party is trying to suppress and make people forget will always exist, however well they're hidden. It means that while our world has dystopian qualities and it does seem to be getting worse in lots of ways, we'll never truly live in a real dystopia. The world is just too complex and varied for any one thing or problem to dominate it completely. There's still tons of problems, and for an increasing amount of unlucky people, they come to dominate their individual lives. It doesn't mean that the good parts of life, like art, music, hobbies, friends, and family, aren't there. Our modern world has made it harder and harder to lose yourself in those parts of life. It all gets in the way, and we're bombarded with these dystopian problems constantly. And it's made the skill of being able to tune all of that out even more important.